from KCRW in Santa Monica and KCRW.com. I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
If you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, composer-songwriter Randy Newman has had 20 Oscar nominations, and he's won once. But he says he still wishes he was really good. Plus, the producer behind the Big Mama's House franchise on being a white guy in the urban comedy business. But first, it's the Hollywood News Banter. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone to Hollywood.
I'm joined by my fellow banterer, John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Hello, John.
Hello, Kim.
So, John, it's almost over the awards season.
Thank goodness.
It's almost over. Sunday night, the Oscars. Saturday afternoon at the beach, the Independent Spirit Awards. So the Oscars, I mean, are you in suspense? I feel like these pundits who get paid and work really hard.
I don't think they get paid.
Paid a little tiny bit and work really hard to predict this stuff. You know, they're laboring to say, well, could there be an upset? And could Hailee Steinfeld win Best Supporting Actress or Nicole Kidman? Or
I think there's a little drama. I think it's probably the King's Speech is best picture to lose to Social Network, but I think it's been a pretty interesting campaign. And I will say, outside of the awards, what has been amazing to me is how well received these films have been. Remember, 2 years ago, the Academy said they wanted to grow the best picture race from 5 to 10 movies because all these tiny little movies.
And I thought it was a dumb idea. Yeah.
But outside of like 127 Hours and Winter's Bone, a lot of the best pictures nominees have done incredibly well. I mean, True Grit, King's Speech, Black Swan, even Kids Are All Right. I mean, these movies have done really well at the box office. So I think that is, to me, the best takeaway from this Oscar season, is that audiences have embraced the year's most critically acclaimed films.
I hope it's not a fluke, because I don't want to go back. Usually I have trouble thinking of 5 nominees, and this year I find that there's 10 reasonable nominees. You know, I mean, there's obviously 2 or 3 that are truly in contention, but none of them is like, oh God, they just nominated The Proposal or something.
No, and I think if you look at the Independent Spirit Awards, which are theoretically designed to award, you know, movies made outside of the studio system, you see a huge overlap between the Academy and the Independent Spirit Awards. 127 Hours, Black Swan, The Kids Are All Right, Winter's Bone. A lot of these films and filmmakers are nominated in both categories. And yet, even though these theoretically independent films are in the Oscar race, a lot of people are going to see them.
And 4 of the 5 Independent Spirit nominees, the only one that is not anywhere in sight, and not only for Oscar, but I think for most people, is a movie called Greenberg with, I think, Ben Stiller and Jennifer Jason Leigh. I have to confess I haven't seen it, but that is one of the 5 best nominees for Spirit
Awards. It's the token Scott Rudin nominee. Scott obviously has Social Network and True Grit in the Academy Awards, so now he's representing the spirits as well.
God forbid he should be left out. And a lot of movies have been made elsewhere, largely because of tax incentives, especially those independents looking for the best deal they can get, but the studios too. And it looks like that gravy train,
yes.
That gravy train may be slowing down.
If you take a look at the nation's economy and you take a look at all the deficits that any number of these states are facing, it's an obvious easy place to cut. I mean, Hollywood has argued, or the film industry has argued, that these tax incentives actually create jobs, so that if a state gives $10 million in a tax incentive to a film, it brings in $20 million in business. And I think there have been a number of good economic studies that say that's actually not true. So now we have the state of Michigan basically slashing its incentive fund from $100 million to about $25 million, and any number of big movies went there, including Transformers 3.
Yeah, I think the star spotting in Michigan is going about to take a big hit. If you think you were going to hang out and see like Shia LaBeouf and other stars, you may need to actually get on a plane and fly to L.A.
Yeah, because they're also not going to be in Ohio or Iowa or Massachusetts where they're cutting back. In some ways, this is probably good news for the California economy, because if other states are not luring productions out of California, theoretically, those productions may end up shooting in-state, which will keep jobs here. So I don't know if it's a net loss for the film industry, but it does mean some of these jobs may be coming back to L.A.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Kim.
That's John Horn of the Los Angeles Times.
For years I have envied your grace and your charm. Everyone loves you, you know. Yes, I know, I know, I know. But I must admit it.
This week, the Oscar campaign will finally draw to a close. Ballots are due on the 22nd, and the ceremony happens Sunday night. Among the many nominees hoping to bring home that little gold man is Randy Newman, again. The singer-songwriter-composer wrote the score and music for Toy Story 3 and Best Song nominee, We Belong Together.
We belong together.
This marks Randy Newman's 20th Oscar nomination. In 2001, after being nominated 15 times without a win, he finally got his statuette for If I Didn't Have You from another Pixar film, Monsters, Inc. Of course, by now, Newman's a veteran when it comes to the whole Oscar drill. I asked him if doing press interviews, like this one, feels like a forced march that the studio makes him do.
They asked me to, but I could say no and have. This time, I'm not doing anything else, and you do want people to sort of remember who you are. There's such competition just in general. I mean, there's people I've forgotten, and I don't even know it. You know, so
right.
I mean,
so
it doesn't hurt, and it's one of the most enjoyable parts of the job. I mean, compared to writing or worrying about whether the director's going to like what you do, it's just a lot nicer.
It's like the victory
Eventually
lap.
You get tired of yourself. Never the process so much, but you get tired of yourself. Let me see. No, I'm all right with myself up to now.
Are you feel like it's the victory lap, even if you don't win, you get to walk around and get congratulated for how great it was?
Maybe. Maybe somewhere that kind of shallow thinking goes on with me. Yes, it does, actually, I think. The nomination was always nice because early on you get like a few weeks where you really felt good and sort of validated that you did a good job. It's not real, but it does feel good, you know.
Are there times when you go there to the ceremony and say to yourself, this time I'm really in the game, or this time somebody else has definitely got the lead?
Yeah.
And you feel like you're in. I read
this
somewhere.
This time I think it's a possibility. I mean, last year I was nominated for two songs from Princess and the Frog. And I knew I wouldn't win. I knew that the country song from Jeff Bridges' movie would win.
Yeah, that felt like it was
and
locked.
And this year, I don't know, 127 Days song could win. So could the country song, the Gwyneth Paltrow thing.
So when you think you're not going to win, like
yeah.
Princess and the Frog,
yeah.
And then they don't say your name, is there still a little like stab to the heart, or do you go, yeah, I knew it?
No.
There's
no stab particularly to the heart if you know it. It would be like, you know, a 40-to-1 shot coming in, and you just don't expect it. When you think you have a chance, a little bit. But I've never really, honestly, felt that way about the whole thing. I mean, it never was that important to me to win. It has been important to be nominated somehow.
Just
you know,
psychically?
Maybe I have too much respect for the music branch.
You've said that the show is sort of extraterrestrial, I think.
It is.
And so are you an alien in the scenario? How is it extraterrestrial?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's such interest in your walk down the red carpet and all and what you're wearing even, you know, getting asked by someone from a Polish photographer, what are you wearing?
I thought guys don't have that as much. Do guys? This is my naivete.
Not as much, no, not as much.
I mean, don't you wear a tux? I don't know.
And, you know, it's nothing at all. It's like thousands of people looking right through you if you have Meryl Streep behind you. And that happens. Movie stars are what it's about. I've often thought, you know, they've got four songs nominated this year. They've got five cinematographers nominated, scenic designers, you know, visual effects. What if there aren't five good jobs by one of them? I mean, it's always been a stepchild. They try and get rid of it if they can. You know,
the music, yeah.
Yeah, not perform them some years. Some years they do. How they decide, I don't know.
You know, they've talked about having it be a montage or should there be a performance.
Yeah.
And what do you think of it?
They ought to just do – they're doing a minute and a half. There's a minute and a half limit.
For the song?
Yeah, pretty much so. I mean, you can come in at 140, 142 maybe, but they want it to be a minute and a half.
When you have to cut a song, you just sort of grit your teeth and do it, I guess.
You know, maybe my standards have lowered about that kind of thing. I remember feeling, oh, we can't cut this. What are you talking about?
What was a hard one? I'd like to hear about a hard one.
When I remember, the first thing I think of is the first time I did it, they had a medley, and Liberace played the scores, a little excerpt of the scores. And
so
then John Schneider
yeah.
from Dukes of Hazzard sang the song I had. I had two nominations. Unusual. I did one with Lyle Lovett. We did a duet on You've Got a Friend, and I could sense he was nervous, or I thought so. And I said, you know, it's a fourth-rate vaudeville show. I mean, don't worry about it. You've done this in your – you could do this in your sleep. And don't
Lyle
worry.
Lovett was nervous?
I thought he was.
Yeah.
But it turned out I made a mistake. I came in early, and Bill Conti, you know, was looking at me like this and kind of saved it, you know.
So
I've
does
been
it feel-
on the show. I'm like – it's like a – I'm a reason for it being crappy, perhaps, you know. It's like I've been on it 7-8 times maybe.
Does it feel disrespectful that they want to squeeze your song, or do you just
sure.
figure that's showbiz?
It, to some extent, it's show business for music. It gets shoved around a lot. In this case, the Academy is always of two minds about the song category. They think people don't like it. They pull so much. Maybe they know something. I don't know, but...
But you just have to do it.
I don't have to.
You elect to do it.
But yeah. My uncle used to not want to go. I remember when he was getting nominated and going to the awards. And he didn't want to go. And my father would talk about this. And he'd say, you know, you have to go for your family. And he said, oh, yeah. So he'd go. I don't know whether my family would care a great deal, but they care some. And I care.
Sure.
It's really kind of a fantastic event. You know, it's like Cirque du Soleil without the tight pants and the smoke.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with songwriter-composer Randy Newman. His Toy Story 3 song, We Belong Together, is in contention for Oscar, Newman's 20th nomination. That's an impressive number, but not a record, not even in Newman's own family. His uncle, Alfred Newman, a legendary composer who won Oscars for Camelot and The King and I, holds that record.
My uncle won 9 times out of 45 or so.
Do you compare yourself with him? Do you say, damn, I've only got my one and he has
You know, he was miserable when he was working. And other members of the family have accused me of somehow emulating that or thinking you need to suffer to produce anything. But, geez, I hope I'm not that stupid. But I could be. He was better than I am. I'd like to get there, but I don't think I will. He was really good. He was about as good as anyone's ever been. I wish I'd worked harder. Music is hard. And I always hoped I'd get really, really good at it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And there's still room, but I just never worked like I thought that was going to. Well, you know, I worked. When you're working all the time, you get better when you're doing a picture. I wasn't going to get into this misery index.
Oh, I don't
here.
Want to draw you into misery. I'm sure some of our listeners...
No, I'm not miserable, but I'm just saying...
But it sounds like you don't even think of yourself as a successful musician, which is...
No, I've been very successful.
Or maybe as really good.
I don't exactly understand where it comes from completely. The ideas for some of the songs, when I go back over stuff, I wonder who I was writing it for. I mean, for myself is who I was writing them for when they're for myself. And the movie stuff, some of it's really pretty good, but I'd like to get better.
When are you brought into a movie? What point in the process, especially with the Pixar movies? Those things take years. So where
they do?
Where are you brought in?
I come in. It's at the end, post production. You know, when sound happens and music, they're the last things you do.
It's not
completely done.
Uh-huh.
Things still in storyboard form with animation.
You're seeing a series of static
it
boards.
Now. No.
Like,
uh-uh.
Not boards.
No.
Okay.
Picture. Usually the timings they've got. You know, if it's... I remember so clearly there was someone ran into a tree in Bug's Life. He's flying for a few minutes and whap. And the timing on it, even though the drawing was real primitive, was exact. So, I mean, I had to notice it. With animated stuff, you know, if Tom Hanks falls down in a movie, then you don't go, ba-da-dum, ba-da-dum. But if Woody falls out of a drawer, you do it. If they caper about, you kind of got to caper about with them.
Right. And do you get to vote, or do you have, the Pixar guys come in and say, no, that's wrong?
They've been pretty good about it. With this last picture, it was less a sort of democratic back and forth because Lee Unkrich was an editor and the director, and he had a temporary music in there.
Right.
It was all my music, but it was from like Ragtime or The Natural and Parenthood sometimes, and even part of a score that got thrown out for Air Force One that I did. And he really liked it. It would have been easier if I could act just unfettered, creatively. This was difficult. And it was a different kind of job because of it. But who's to argue? I mean, what are you going to say? You were wrong?
Well, I think there are people who would say, yeah, you're Randy Newman. You get to tell him he's wrong.
Yeah, you'd think so. But it's their picture.
I mean, when Lee Unkrich has your unused music from Air Force One, do you give that to him and say, here, plug this in?
They just plug anything in they
How
want.
They find
I mean, they
it?
Could plug. It was recorded. The guy, Wolfgang Petersen, all of a sudden, he just didn't like it anymore. He was fine with it one day.
Oh,
the next
God.
Day, no, get me something else. But I bought it back for, $400.20. So it's available. It's online somewhere. There's something called Forbidden Air Force One.
You're kidding. I had no idea.
No, there is. I'll tell you, I didn't either until someone told me.
That's funny.
We 9 reels of it.
It's sort of big cojones to fire you off a movie. I mean,
no.
I'm in awe.
They're much bigger than that. I mean, music is really a small part of what they're doing, and they get used to making decisions, directors do. What do you think of this hat? That's good. What the hell does he know about hats? All of a sudden, some film student from NYU has got to be talking about hats. Same thing often happens with music.
Do you ever think, I'm done, I'm sick of it?
Yeah. As I told you, I'm prone to beating myself up, almost to a paralytic extent where I just won't try. I won't go in there to write. It doesn't seem like a big deal. Go in there, open the door, sit down there at the piano and with a piece of paper. I'll do a lot to avoid it. And I think, well, why? Maybe I'd be happier. Maybe I don't have to do this, But I guess it's great to feel you're getting better at something. And music's hard. And sometimes I think I'm getting better in some ways. I think the last albums I made for myself were the best albums I've made. I'm pretty sure of that. And that's very important to me, too important almost. So it's better all in all to be in there mixing it up and going through these ups and downs. It seems like a giant down every day, You don't know what to do sometimes at the beginning. But what the hell else am I going to do? It's better. I mean, ultimately, I could drift along and watch reruns of The Office, all day, but it's not enough. Almost. But not really.
Thank goodness it's not quite enough.
Yeah.
Randy Newman is a singer, songwriter, composer, lyricist. He's been nominated 20 times for film scores and original songs, and won once. This year, he's nominated for We Belong Together from Toy Story 3. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure.
Coming up after a short break, producer David Friendly on his niche as the white guy behind a bunch of comedies that star African-American comedians. You're listening to The Business from KCRW and KCRW.com. This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. On February 18th, the third installment of the Big Mama's House franchise, Big Mama's Like Father, Like Son, opened in theaters. It's been a while. The last one came out in 2006, but Martin Lawrence is back in the role of the FBI agent going undercover as Big Mama. This time he brings his stepson undercover with him.
La, la, la. You're a difficult child, Charmaine Daisy Pierce. Who? My great niece. And you better start sounding like it before you scare someone.
How's this?
David Friendly is the producer behind the Big Mama's House franchise. These movies haven't enjoyed much critical success, but the previous ones did have fans. According to Box Office Mojo, the first one made more than $173 million worldwide, and the second one pulled in almost $140 million. David Friendly has produced a range of films in his career, from the sweet 1991 hit My Girl to the Denzel Washington Meg Ryan drama Courage Under Fire in 1996 and Little Miss Sunshine in 2006. But Friendly has also carved out a niche in movies that star African-American comedians. Six of his last seven films have been in that genre, from Soul Men with Bernie Mac and Samuel L. Jackson to Meet Dave with Eddie Murphy. Friendly is well aware that these movies haven't been critical darlings, but they have kept him in the game in challenging times in the movie business. I asked him if he gets any attitude around town because the Big Mama's House sequel isn't exactly cinematic art.
Yes, I do run into some of that snarkiness, usually from the kind of people that read the New York Times and listen to NPR. But, and I'm one of them
who are not real Americans.
but I will tell you that for whatever reason, the character of Big Mama is beloved. So there is a big and loyal following, and you don't get to make three Big Mamas movies unless there is.
White people and black people colors of people?
I mean, the first movie did $120 million domestic. So we're crossing over. The other thing that surprises people is how well it does foreign. Both movies traveled very well, which is typically something they tell you that African-American-driven movies do not travel. This character travels all over the world. It's bizarre, and I think it's because it's funny. And, you know, you don't necessarily need to fully understand the language. It's a guy in a dress, and it's funny.
Well, not to belabor the snarkiness question,
sure,
but
please.
Big Mama's...
Go ahead
and belabor it.
Here comes the tough Kim Masters question that I was warned about.
Big Mama's House 2, it made a lot of money worldwide, mm-hmm. about mm-hmm. $140 million, is that right?
That's right.
The critics attacked.
Right.
The Onion did a truly tasteless spoof about people bringing down a plane to avoid having to watch it. I don't know if you saw that.
I didn't get to see that, but it sounds funny.
So, I mean, I'm sure there must be a core of Big Mama fans. But what about how do you tell people, you know what, this is fresh? Is this about marketing?
No, there's a couple of things that you're asking there. The truth is we know we're not going to get, or at least we don't anticipate, great reviews for a movie like this. Because to be fair, I think there's a bias against sequels because people think that, you know, it's just an opportunity to go out and try to churn out money or something. I wish it was that easy. It's just not. And the bottom line is you make the best movie you can. And in this case, what we did was the script was written, it bears telling, by a 26-year-old Columbia graduate named Matt Fogel. I read a script of his having nothing to do with Big Mama. And we started talking. We had a general meeting. It turned out this kid from New York, 26, is a huge Big Mama's fan. And I said, well, we're trying to figure out what to do with the next one. You got any ideas? And he was the one who suggested that we introduce this stepson character that follows him into battle. And they both go undercover at this all-girls school to investigate a crime.
This 26-year-old mm-hmm. screenwriter, did I get the name right? Is he a nice Jewish boy from New York?
Matt Fogel, nice Jewish boy from actually New Jersey.
The nice Jewish boy from New Jersey. We have you, mm-hmm. Another nice Jewish boy.
From New York.
From New York. And, you know, in your case, six of your last seven movies mm-hmm. are urban comedies with black male comics in the lead. How is it, I mean, that you white Jewish guys are doing black comedy like this?
Well, the way I look at it, I don't say I want to go out and work with African-American comedians.
No.
I just think that some of the funniest people are the actors that I've been able to work with. So I've worked with Martin three times, Eddie Murphy twice. I worked with Denzel Washington. It was a drama. I've worked with Bernie Mac and Sam Jackson. And I didn't go to them because they were black. I went to them because they were funny and great for the role. And by way of background, I mean, it's a bit of a long story, but I grew up, as you know, Kim, my father was Fred Friendly, the famous journalist, news pioneer. It was a very serious household, and there were six kids. And in order to get attention, I tried to be funny. And I sort of like found these African-American comedians that I would listen to. Richard Pryor had records. You know, Moms Mabley was a great character. I was a big Flip Wilson fan. And I don't think it's a color issue. I really don't. I think it's a comedy issue that, to me, some of the funniest people in the world happen to have been African-American, and I wound up working with them. I can't really explain it. It wasn't a strategy, and I've done plenty of movies that didn't feature African-Americans, but for whatever reason, this is a business that likes to pigeonhole people, and they think that I know something about this world, and sometimes scripts and ideas are brought to me that are in this universe, and I gravitate to it. That's not all I do.
There are some exceptions. It's not like you've only done black comedy. One of the standouts of the last few years is Little Miss Sunshine, which
let me correct you and say the standout of my career, okay. My favorite and movie I'm most proud of working on. I toil in the land of the indie, and I also toil in studio movies because I love them. I think there's room for Big Mama's House and Little Miss Sunshine. I want to do it all.
Well, I assume you also want to pay your bills. And
yes, I do. I have two children at a very fine school. It costs a lot of money to keep them there. And I have my certain tuition movies, as we call them at home. But I want to be clear about something. I really love the Big Mama's House movies. And I'm serious. I'm the audience for those movies. I laugh when we're making them. I laugh when we're developing the movies. These are not movies I would ever, quote unquote, apologize for. I'm a fan.
When they come to you to be the producer, are they coming to you because you're the guy who's comfortable with urban comedy? Or?
No, I mean, in most of the cases, the producer generates the material and then the studio says they'll make the movie. There was one movie where I was simply told that Bernie Mac and Sam Jackson wanted to work together. They didn't have a script. They didn't have an idea. Would I consider trying to help figure this out?
But why you?
Why me? Probably because I'd done it a few times. You know, I think you know the answer to your own question.
Your niche,
I had a
right.
reputation that I would be comfortable in this neck of the woods and that the actors would feel good about this.
So when you're the white guy on these films mm-hmm. that are in some cases, I'm sure, made primarily with an African-American audience in mm-hmm. mind, hoping the crossover, and then you've got a black comic like an Eddie Murphy or a Martin Lawrence, obviously these guys have mm-hmm. very strong opinions about who they are.
Yeah,
what
and
they,
who their audience is and right. knowing what will work with them.
So do you just like... stay out of content, or is there a conversation?
Oh, no. I'm very involved with content. First of all, people think that there's a lot of ad-libbing and improvising on these movies. And the truth is that it's very, very hard to make a good movie, in my opinion, without knowing what is going to be said and what the scene is going to be. When you talk about a movie like Big Mama's House, Martin will improvise somewhat as Big Mama. But when he's playing himself, he wants to know what his dialogue is.
So when you have these conversations, does Martin Lawrence or Eddie Murphy ever say, you don't understand, that won't work because you're not black and you don't get it?
I've never had that said to me. If it had happened, I would tell you. But I think we're all past that at this point, and everybody's trying to get the best work up there. You know, I'm not trying to duck the question or anything, but I think these guys, I've done it enough, I have enough experience, and I'm comfortable with them. If I was uncomfortable with them and nervous and tiptoeing around, that might come up, but I'm not. It's just people trying to make a good, funny movie.
David Friendly is a producer of movies like Courage Under Fire and Little Miss Sunshine. He's also produced the Big Mama's House movies. Thank you, David.
Thank you. I had a very good time being here.
And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. The executive producer is Matt Holzman. To leave a comment about today's show, go to kcrw.com/thebusiness, where you can also stream and podcast the show and check out past episodes. And we're on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/kcrwthebusiness and like us. And you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.